Temna zvezda. Oddaja o filmu in skritih straneh filmskega vesolja. Vsak prvi in tretji ponedeljek v mesecu ob 8:30 zvečer.
Drage poslušalke in dragi poslušalci, prav lepo pozdravljeni v novi ediciji Temne zvezde. Danes smo za vas, poleg filmskih novičk, pripravili daljši prispevek o otvoritvenem filmu Festivala migrantskega filma Dežela vmes Davida Fedelja. Festival letos poteka med 12. in 20. junijem, ponuja pa zares pester, večinoma brezplačen program. Dežela vmes prvenstveno prek intervjuje z afriškimi migranti odstira aktualno migracijsko politiko EU, ki z bolj ali manj odkritim financiranjem lokalnih maroških oblasti podpira aktualne migracijske politike. Njihova strukturna podlaga so rasizem in nacionalizem ter v skladu z neoliberalno agendo deregulirani ekonomski interesi, katerih epistemološki temelj, sledeč aktualni prestrukturirani kolonialnosti kot globalni matrici moči, je specifična apropriacija izključenih. Tudi se režiser Dežela vmes neposredno ne ukvarja z izrisovanjem širše genealogije aktualne nekropolitične migracijske politike, s presunljivimi vodnimi posnetki ljudi, ki skušajo preplezati 6-metrske kovinske ograje, postavljene okoli Melilje, španske enklave v Maroku, ki številnim beguncem predstavlja vstopnico v EU, brezkompromisno začrta idejni leitmotiv dokumentarca. Z video estetiko, ki za voljo izbrane rezolucije aludira na televizijske novice, a hkrati to isto formo subvertira s pripovedmi intervjujencev, to je kriminaliziranih migrantov in migrantk, ki so dan za dnem prisiljeni ždeti v nekakšnem mestnem prostoru izrednega stanja, ogroženih strani maroške vojske, lokalnih mafijskih združb, ne nazadnje pa tudi strani španske policije, ki tiste begunce, ki se jim vendarle uspe probiti skozi militarizirano melilsko mejo, vztrajno vrača maroškim oblastem. Režiser pozicijo migrantov, ki zasedajo mesto izrednega stanja, reprezentira prek skoraj da že etnografskih posnetkov vsakdana tako imenovanega golega življenja, katerega migranti sami usporejo z življenjem živalskega. Prehranjevanje z ostanki, ki jih smeti odvržajo trgovine, hoteli, restauracije, pomankanje vode, kaj šele ustrezne zdravniške oskrbe, torej vsega tistega, kar ima biopolitično administriranje življenje za samoumevno. Etnografija se s close-upi stopnjuje zlasti v trenutkih prehranjevanja iše mlade ženske s 4 majhnimi otroki, ki je potem, ko je pred njenimi očmi preminil mož zaradi mučenja, ostala popolnoma sama. Z razliko od dela Silvana Žorža, ki se ukvarja s podobno tematiko, je David Fedel osredotočen na neposrednost podobe same. Fedela nas zanima toliko politika estetike kot na primer Žorža. Prekinjanje genealogije vrši zlasti z naturalistično eksplicitnostjo podob, pri tem pa se Fedel zanaša na potencialnost globalnega javnega prostora oziroma civilne sfere kot tiste, ki naj vrši pritisk na pristojne organe. V tem oziru je Fedelovo razumevanje filmskega medija blizu razumevanju statusa fotografske podobe, kot ga v odlični monografiji The Civil Contract of Photography predoči Ariela Zolaj. Slednja na primeru okupiranih palestinskih ozemelj razvija koncept družbene pogodbe fotografije kot predvsem odprtega prostora najširše svobodne skupnosti, ki je ne omejuje hierarhije, meje ter nadzorovanje pogleda. Gre namreč za prostor svobode, ki je komplementaren z vizijo Azulajeve, predočeno v stremljenju po vzpostavitvi preoblikovanega globalnega državljanstva, ki ni pogojeno z izključevanimi okviri nacionalnega in nacionalizma kot esencialističnih potez suverena. Zavoljo vsega tega se zdi, da pričujoči poziv Ariela Azulaj deli tudi Fadel, ki mestoma skuša tudi predreti lastno avtoriteto glasu kot tistega, ki naj bi proizvajal tako imenovano resnico. A predajmo besedo raje režiserju samemu, ki je na pogovor po izteku filma prišel v vitu sanitarne povoje.
I don't know, I feel a little helpless. I make the film and then I leave and there's a real disconnect between, like, the realities of what you're seeing in the film. It's, you didn't watch a film, you watched a reality that happened and continues today. And it's, when I speak to Aisha and Yaakov, they understand that I'm not making a film. I thought I was making a film, but for them it's real life. And I'm trying to minimize the distance between the film that you just watched and the reality. Like, you didn't just watch a film. This continues today. And I guess today I did a small interview and I was asked if I'm an activist, and I don't know the answer to that question. But I guess in my own small way, maybe this is my activist role to, I don't know. I feel, you know, you go and make the film and then you show it around the world and I feel very separate. So this is sort of maybe me trying to keep in solidarity with people in the film. Maybe it's a silly idea, I don't know.
But you're leaving for Brussels on Sunday, just for one day, and then you're coming back. Can you tell us what is happening in Brussels?
Well, as long I hope that it works, but I've been asked to go to Brussels by a German television station or magazine to they're doing a small report on my film, and they're going to be interviewing me and also interviewing hopefully some people in the European Commission some people within the European Commission I've been able to actually show the film to in the last few months. I'm not sure who I'm going to be meeting with on Monday and whether they'll have watched the film or not. But it's just me. And I made this film by myself, and I sort of, if anyone, any screening, any opportunity, any interview, I sort of, you know, I have to get as much attention because I don't have anybody behind me to sort of do any promotion or things like that. So, hopefully, and then I've been told that hopefully in September I may have an opportunity to present the film to the European Parliament, which may happen or may not, but at least then I feel that I'm hopefully trying to do something.
So we can hope that your film may be part of it.
Well, I have no, I mean, you know, like, we all think that that would be the goal, obviously, but I don't know, you know, European Union, European Commission know the situation in Morocco, maybe not some details or maybe not, but, you know, it's particularly in the last few months, there have been a large number of migrants that have successfully entered into Melilla, and sadly, many people have entered, but sadly, many people continue to be beaten and injured very badly and killed. And it's not hidden from you know, the EU understand what's happening here, but it's part of their policies to externalize border control outside of the boundaries of Europe to stop migrants from arriving in Europe. And so it's done outside, which keeps it away from the media attention and keeps it away from maybe some more stricter controls within Europe. You know, in Morocco, there's less respect, I can say, for human rights.
Gledalko občinstvo je na režiserja naslovila tudi pomembno vprašanje glede samega snemalnega procesa dokumentarca.
Were you ever at the site when military or police came?
It was extremely difficult for many reasons to make this film. We didn't have any, I say we, I made this film, I had the assistance of Reda, who's a good friend of mine now, he's a young Moroccan filmmaker. He was my assistant, friend, psychologist, everything. And I was very conscious of not being caught by the authorities. Quite a number of people while we were there did try to film and did try to take photos and were taken, arrested very, very quickly. We were arrested by the military and the police after about 10 weeks of filming. And we were strongly threatened and strongly advised to never return back to Gurugu. And I never returned, I haven't been back since. But I was able to hide my video and tapes and things like that, and they never actually found any footage that I had taken. So I didn't tell them that I was making a film. But it was very interesting because you're trying to tell the story and you're trying to get close to truthfully tell the story as possible, but without putting ourselves at risk, without putting Yako, Aisha at risk, and without putting the film at risk in a way. Like, because I had filmed and I had taken a lot of footage, I didn't want to get caught for many reasons, because I also wanted to finish the film. But ultimately, it was being arrested or captured or whatever the word is that ended us filming. We were with Aisha at the time, and she started towards the end of the time that we were filming, she started every day going to make this jewelry on the side of the road. So I wasn't actually filming her, we were just playing with her kids, and all of a sudden many, many military and police cars arrived, and we'd spent like all the time in the forest. It was until we actually came to the road area that we got caught. But it was interesting because, say, when that day where the military burnt all the camps, Yako called us the day before. So every day we would call Yako, and or he would call us, and if there were military there, we would not go. But this particular day when the military came to burn everything, he called us and said, "You have to come right now, the military are burning everything, you have to." And I said, I'll come tomorrow. As much as you want to try to film the reality of what's happening, I didn't want to put myself, Reda, Yako, and people at risk. So we went the next day too. So I can say that I thought very strongly about how to be able to continue going into the forest without being caught. And then the only time that I did film the military and police was from a long distance when Clement died, and I just filmed don't know if it made sort of sense, but the ambulance came and took the body away, and I filmed from afar. Morocco is not a place to be captured filming things like this.
You said that there were people also trying to film or take photos.
Yeah.
But were there also any people helping the refugees?
We all like to think we're helping in our own way. Yes and no. Yeah, I mean, while I was there, Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders were in Morocco. But while I was there, they actually stopped their work. They left Morocco. But they were providing some plastic, they were providing medicine and blankets. There are some local NGOs that are doing some work. There are individuals, people that are giving small money or food or clothes or so forth. But, it's a really controlled area. As much as it's a forest and it's a big area, it's still difficult to get inside there without being detected by military and police and so forth.
V nadaljevanju se je razvila zanimiva, predvsem pa pomembna debata glede politik reprezentacije, torej glede načinov predstavljanja pričujoče tematike širše javnosti, to je etike in politike, funkcije filmske podobe, pa tudi glede motiva za snemanje danega filma.
Thank you very much for that, and I think it also brings a lot of issues to light. And one of the things that really impressed me was when you brought in the story of the lady. Because in the beginning, I was only seeing men and I was wondering, okay, yes, I know there are migrant women and children, and I was wondering why I've not seen any. So it was very impressive that you included her story. And I also like the fact that her story was not about a clandestine movement, but rather a refugee recognized by UNHCR. But unfortunately, she was not receiving the help that she ought to be receiving from them, and so she opted for that. So that brings in another dimension, you know. We have all these organizations claiming to give assistance to migrants, but actually they're not doing, you know, a proper job. And for me, that was terrific. Thank you very much for that. And then there was a statement that was made by one of the interviewees that I found very catchy. And he made a statement saying that we leave our homes to go anywhere. And that's a very pregnant statement. Because most of the times when people think about Africa and migrants, the first thing that comes to mind is that Africans are leaving their homes to go to Europe, only Europe. That's not the case. We have a lot of migrants who are moving from one African country to another African country, and they're staying there. So that statement alone also should, people should be able to read into that and realize it's not only Europe, it's also within Africa. So for me, I also found that very interesting. The other issue that I found that people need to also kind of pay attention to is the human rights abuses. You know, most of the times when you watch such documentaries, in my opinion, I could be wrong, people tend to concentrate on, oh, they're coming to Europe, they're coming to Europe, they're coming to Europe. And they forget, for instance, the abuses that the migrants are being subjected to by both the Europeans on the other side and on the African border. And I think there needs to be more advocacy around that, because there were very many people who are injured, people losing their lives. It's important that more light is thrown into that. And I kind of found it disturbing that you filmed the prayer, considering the fact that it was Muslim, Islam, because we already know Europe is having a problem with phobia for Muslims. As you know what happened in Norway, saying Muslims are coming to take over Europe. So I found that very problematic. It kind of gave an image of all the migrants are Muslim and they are coming to Europe.
I can talk for hours about each of those. With that particular, I filmed what I found. I was filming the Mali community, and 99% of that particular community were Muslim. If they were Christian and undertaking a different prayer service, I would have filmed that. You know, it's not for me, it's not an activist film. It was a film about what I discovered in the forest. And I mean, it has obviously showing the human rights abuses and so forth, but I'm just trying to show, I'm trying to document the situation with the women. I wanted to very much show, tell women's stories. Aisha was the only woman, or there was one other woman in Gurugu. For the film, I was extremely lucky that she trusted me to tell her story. Because I was telling the story of Melilla and the fence, it's 99% men. There's only been, about 1 month ago, a Cameroonian girl jumped the fence, and people saying that she's the only female that's ever jumped the fence. Because I was filming in the forest, unfortunately, in a way, I had to focus on the story of the young guys. The other forest areas, there were many women and many children, but they forests were very much controlled by an internal mafia, controlled by the migrants themselves. and I was demanded 10,000 euro in one particular place to film, and it was impossible to film in many other places. So, you know, my comment to that is that when you make a film, this is not in any way trying to be the definitive story of migration, it's not the definitive story of the situation in Morocco, but I think it's a pretty good, I've shown the film to many of these migrants themselves that were in the film, and others that have been in Gurugu, and I'm extremely proud that the comment they say is you have quite well captured the reality of life in Gurugu, and in a sense, that was my main purpose. I'd love to talk to you about
it. Okay, and then that leads me now to my question.
Wow.
One of the people that you filmed really made an interesting statement, and it made me think about the ethical questions and if you took any of it into consideration. He said something along the lines that he's taking our pictures and he's going to sell it to Europe. He's going to make money out of our suffering. So what I would really like to know is, did you get the consent of each and every individual in that film? Because some of them actually were very disturbed by you taking it. And then the other question is, what really motivated you to do this film?
Okay, so the first one, what happened was, there are about 15 different communities living in the mountains, all different nationalities, and we were only able to get access to the community from Mali. The other communities, we spoke for hours and talked and drank and played football, but we were not able to film them. Once we met Yako, who I've since realized there is a chief, and he was what's called the first prime minister, he was the prime minister of the community. We went for a few days and we didn't film, and I explained that I wanted to make a film, and I asked him for his permission, and he told us to come back in 3 or 4 days and he would ask the community on our behalf. So we came back and he said, yes, they have given permission. There are some people that don't want to be filmed. He said, absolutely no problem, we respect all of that. And then once they said yes, it changed, it flipped totally. When I was tired and wasn't filming, they were coming and telling me that I must film this and film that and film this. They realize they're in a film. They're not people that live in a forest. They're real humans that understand media and understand films. And they very much, and what's been very interesting is I've shown it to people, and 5 days ago I was in Paris showing it to a migrant that was in Gurugu. And for them, it's also a souvenir as well, whether it be a positive or negative souvenir, but a souvenir of a time in their life or something. With the prayer and the benediction, Yakov told me, he called me and said, tomorrow you must come and film our benediction. You know, I was following the Mali community and they happened to be Muslim, and most of them in the forest happened to be Muslim. At the start of the film where the people are jumping the fence, some people said to me, you shouldn't put that in because it shows an avalanche of, I'm making a documentary, I'm not making propaganda in a way. They are there to jump a fence. They are beaten as they attempt, and this is the reality, and now we can have a discussion about all of these things. If I just showed one particular side of an issue, then maybe I'm not being responsible to show the reality. I can't remember your second question, I'm sorry. You know, like, in a way, I wanted to tell a story of migration in general, and then I was in Europe and I met many migrants. I was living in Italy and I met many migrants that had done the journey up through sub-Saharan Africa, and in Italy it was more coming into Lampedusa from Libya. But I then decided, instead of trying to make a film in retrospect of people telling me their story, I would go. And I discovered Gurugu on the internet, in a way, and I couldn't believe what I was seeing and what I was reading. And I'm 100% independent and I don't need anybody's permission to do anything, so I just bought a one-way ticket to Morocco and thought I would make a film. It was based on the human rights aspect of the human rights abuses. It was mainly through looking at the work that Médecins Sans Frontières were doing by highlighting the violence and the abuse that the migrants were facing.
Mm-hmm. Drago poslušalstvo, to je bil David Fedel, neodvisni filmski ustvarjalec, čigar filma Film Dežela vmes smo si lahko ogledali na vodnem večeru festivala migrantskega filma, ki ga boste lahko obiskovali vse do 20. junija. Podroben program festivala lahko najdete na spletni strani festivala.
Suffering, echinacea buffering. We aim to remember what we choose to forget. God's just a baby, and her diaper is wet.
Call the police, I'm strapped to the teeth, and live on the disregard of every belief. Calling the law, I'm fixing the draw. I lie between what isn't seen to call up a brawl. Calling them now, cause it's about to go pow. I'm standing on the threshold of the ups and the downs. Call up the truth, because I'm about to break loose. We're taking it, cause then I'm breaking out of my noose. I got a list of demands, written on the palm of my hands. I'm on my this and you got no right stand. We live in hand to mouth, they wanna be somebody. See somebody, try and free somebody. Got a list of demands, written on the palm of my hands. I'm on my this and you got no right stand. We live in hand to mouth, hand to mouth. I got a list of demands, written on the palm of my hands. And you got no right stand. We live in hand to mouth. They wanna be somebody, see somebody, try and free somebody. Got a list of demands, written on the palm of my hands. I'm on my fist and you got no right stand. We live in hand to mouth, hand to mouth.
Preden pa se od vas poslovimo, naj vam postrežemo še z nekaj zanimivimi filmskimi novičkami. Kinotečno sezono se bo med 17. in 21. junijem zaključila z drugo edicijo festivala 35 mm filma, ki, kot so zapisali na spletni strani Kinoteke, slavi, ohranja in opominja na določen standard in specifiko filmske projekcije, kakršna je zaznamovala prvih 120 let zgodovine filma, danes pa izginja celo številnih filmskih arhivov in kinotek po svetu. Pri tem so organizatorji festivala še dodali, da druga festivalska izdaja odločno prebija lokalni okvir in se uveljavlja kot izvirna manifestacija v mednarodnem prostoru. Se pa boste lahko tudi letos udeležili kinodvorišča Kinodvorovega letnega kina v atriju Slovenskih železnic. Med 18. junijem in 15. julijem se bo tako Kinodvorovo platno vsak večer preselilo na plano. Sezono bo odprla premiera filma Večna ljubimca Jima Jarmusha. Med 17. do 21. junija bo na Bledu potekal mednarodni filmski festival Bled Film Festival. Več o programu festivala lahko najdete na spletni strani festivala www.bledff.com. Tisti, ki radi prebirate poglobljeno filmsko literaturo, pa naj vas opozorimo, da je pri Društvu za širjenje filmske kulture Kino izšla monografija Film proti spektaklu Jean-Louisa Comollija. V kratkem pa bo izšla tudi nova številka revije Kino, ki bo tokrat v spredje postavila jugoslovanski in postjugoslovanski film. Studies show that when a given norm is changed in the face of the unchanging, the remaining contradictions will parallel. Tako, za danes bi bilo to počasi vse. Se novič slišimo v poletnih mesecih. Današnjo oddajo sem pripravila Nina Cvar, za tehnično realizacijo pa je poskrbel Sanja.
Temna zvezda. Oddaja o filmu in skritih straneh filmskega vesolja. Vsak prvi in tretji ponedeljek v mesecu ob 8:30 zvečer.